6:30 comedy next.
If you're looking for laughs,
this is where the magic happens.
BBC iPlayer's got you covered.
Good. Life is interesting at last.
With over 3,000 episodes of comedy favourites.
They make for great entertainers.
I need a shortlist.
Including The Office, Two Doors Down, The Thick of It, and many more.
Oh, what is that?
Whoa. Put my staper inside a jelly again.
Bring on the laughs.
What are you laughing at?
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
This is BBC Radio 4. Just time to mention that while Front Row is off air for a short break, we'll be hearing some past editions of This Cultural Life the next few evenings, beginning tonight with Nick Cave. That's coming up in around 45 minutes at 7:15, just after The Archers. And John Wilson will be back with a new series of This Cultural Life later this week on Radio 4. That's on Thursday morning at 11 o'clock, and his first guest, the prolific author Lee Child. But now, over to David Mitchell.
We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. Tonight, our panellists will be attempting to spot the plastic genitalia of truth beneath our Ken Doll's leisure wear of lies. Please welcome Tony Hawks, Zoe Lyons, Justin Edwards and Lucy Porter. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Justin Edwards. Justin, your subject is stationery. Material such as pencils, paper, pens, envelopes, ink and other equipment used for writing or printing at home or in the office. Off you go, Justin. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
In ancient Assyria, both letters and envelopes were made of pottery. Delivery of such correspondence was a difficult job, and the postmen of the time used wheeled carts to transport the heavy letters from town to town, giving rise to the phrase pushing the envelope. The Humble pencil was invented by TV personality and farmer Kate Humble in 2018. as a means of marking her pigs. But she is not the only celebrity to have dabbled in the exciting world of stationery. Tipp-Ex was invented by George Harrison's mother. The initial recipe was a combination of milk and a powerful solvent, which had to be abandoned after too many people fainted while sniffing the tiny bottles to see if they were still fresh.
Zoe.
I don't know whether I'm having false memory recall, but I think George Harrison's mum did invent Tipp-Ex.
You are having false memory recall.
Where did that come from? Fever dream did I dream that in?
In fact, Tipp-Ex was invented by the mother of Mike Nesmith, member of the band The Monkees.
That's what I've done. I've confused my Beatles and Monkees.
You've fallen into my little Tipp-Ex web.
It's the same shape as the truth, but different contents.
Yeah.
It was Socrates who first said, "Americans are absolutely paperclip mad." A sentence that also works without the word paperclip. Sales of paperclips in America were slow until Taylor Swift began dating a paperclip in 2015. Now the Americans purchase over 11 billion paperclips every year, often weaving them together into affordable and everyday bulletproof vests.
Lucy.
I mean, it's got to be worth a punt that they buy a lot of paperclips. 11 billion?
11 billion. You're absolutely right. The US isn't the only paperclip-obsessed nation. Norwegians consider them a national symbol, their invention being generally attributed to the Norwegian Johan Vala in 1899. Paperclips were worn by Norwegian patriots as a symbol of resistance against Nazi occupation during the Second World War, and anyone seen wearing a paperclip risked harsh punishments at the hands of the German occupiers.
Imagine if the Nazis asked to see your papers. You hand them over and it's, I've left the paperclip on.
Exactly, that would be, in a way the Germans would like that because it's organised. They have to go, how do you mean your paperclip? What are you implying with your paperclip?
Yes.
As anyone who has tried to laminate important documents in a trouser press will know, stationery and business travel make uneasy bedfellows. After the failure of his solar-powered pencil sharpener and the many misunderstandings over his 12-inch ring expander, a Sheffield inventor created a ballpoint pen that changes into a coat hanger. This idea was developed to solve the age-old question, what is the quickest and most efficient way to get ink all over your shirt?
Tony.
I think that somebody did try to invent a solar-powered pencil sharpener. It makes sense. The sun is out and pencils need sharpening. And if they haven't, they will now.
OK. It's not true, Tony.
No.
Why does it make sense?
Well, if you you use the natural resources of the earth to get your pencils sharp.
But it's possible to sharpen a pencil without electricity, is it not?
I need to say,
if you want to exhaust yourself, Dave,
I would say
you go ahead and exhaust yourself as part of your fitness regime. I'm not doing it.
I would say if the Green Party said the only thing you're going to have to do to achieve carbon neutrality is forego your electric pencil sharpeners, people would go, do you know what? I can handle it.
During World War I, invisible ink was made using semen because the enemy couldn't detect it. Or if they could, they just went, oh, God, I'm not reading that.
Zoe.
Oh, go on. I mean, I remember doing something similar at school, but I can't remember what it was. It might have been lemon juice, but I can't fully remember.
You're absolutely right, oh. Zoe. Yeah. The use of semen as an invisible ink during World War I was pioneered by the chief of the British Secret Intelligence Service, whose surname was, appropriately, Smith Cumming. semen was Smith Cumming's invisible ink of choice, as it didn't react to standard methods of ink detection such as iodine vapour or charring. However, it soon fell out of favour due to complaints about the smell. So, because Smith Cumming, he liked using it. Did anybody eat any more of invisible ink making? I'm making a batch! I'm sending all the agents out with at least half a pint each.
Well, this is what people mean when they say the Great War was one of history's most significant displays of good old-fashioned British spunk. The principal advantage of writing with semen, of course, is that if you do make a mistake, it's very easy to just rub one out. Stationery has always been an important part of the film and television world. But did you know the noise of the TARDIS was created in the radiophonic workshop by sampling the sound of an electric pencil sharpener? The constant whining that follows every episode of Doctor Who is, however, created by the fans. The sound of the doors opening on the Starship Enterprise was made by pulling a piece of paper out of an envelope.
Tony.
I think it was definitely the pulling of a whatever he said to create the Star Trek sound effect, the doors opening.
You're absolutely right, Tony. Yes. Yes, the futuristic noise of the Starship Enterprise's doors in the early TV Star Trek shows was created by recording a piece of paper sliding from an envelope, followed by the squeak of a shoe on the floor. The door sound was given an upgrade for the later films, where they used instead the flushing of a vacuum train toilet.
Couldn't somebody just have gone, shh? That would have been a lot easier, wouldn't it?
It would have been easier, but would it be the franchise it now is?
No, probably not. You're right.
Just somebody just go beep. just go beep. Everyone knows it's pretend. What about the phasers? I don't know. Zap! That'll do.
Why do you say that? I once watched a man going through one of those where you do your own grocery things in the, what do they call it? Self-checkout.
Yeah.
And he was quite clearly not paying for much of the items, and he just stood in front of the machine and went, beep. Beep. Yeah. Beep. It was the most beautiful, blatant display of shoplifting I've ever seen in my life.
I've got a very old car which doesn't have parking sensors, so when I'm reversing it, I do go beep, 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 every time I think I'm getting closer, and it works as a system. I've not hit anything.
Yes. OK, well, I stand corrected. They should have just gone...
Yeah. Yeah. And Chewbacca's roar in Star Wars was just the slowed-down cheer of George Lucas finally getting his printer to connect.
Thank you, Justin. And at the end of that round, Justin, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that in ancient Assyria, both letters and envelopes were made of pottery. The clay envelopes were sealed in front of a group of witnesses and had to be broken in order for the receiver to read the clay tablet inside. And the second truth is that a Sheffield inventor created a ballpoint pen that changes into a coat hanger. And that means, Justin, that you've scored 2 points. OK, we turn now to Zoe Lyons. Zoe, your subject is fast food. Easily prepared, processed food served in restaurants and food outlets as a quick meal or to be taken away. Off you go, Zoe.
The fish burger originated in Ireland, and that's why it's called fillet all fish. In China, customers at Burger King can enjoy such unique menu items as the Plopper Whopper, so called because they plop the whole burger, bun and all, into boiling fat to fry. To wash this down, you can buy a poo-poo smoothie, a delicate blend of fruit and British seawater.
Justin.
I believe the Plopper Whopper to be a real thing.
The Plopper Whopper is not a real thing.
But I think the poo-poo smoothie is a real thing.
It is. It's happened to me. but yes, it is a real thing, Tony. In 2014, Burger King in China launched a mango-flavoured iced fruit drink named the Poo Poo Smoothie, containing little pulp-like pearls that are supposed to explode in your mouth upon consumption.
A town in the Northern Territories of Australia has a rather unusual fast food delivery service. After losing his driver's licence, Burger Shack owner Damo Higgins taught his pet big red kangaroo to drop off takeaways for him. Food is stored and kept warm in Matilda's marsupial pouch, and she is trained to deliver roo to a handful of loyal customers.
It's like you don't want to enjoy it.
In 2005, police in Germany were finally able to apprehend a man who for months had been buying food from a branch of Wendy's with stolen cards. The thief turned out to be a man called Hans Burgler. Seems like the characters from McDonaldland have it in for Wendy's. The same year, a man called Ronald McDonald was caught stealing cash from a Wendy's branch, while a Mr. Grimace tried to set one on fire in Florida.
Tony.
I think it was Hans Burgler is a real person.
He is not.
Oh,
sorry. No. Justin.
In that case, Ronald McDonald was definitely stealing cash from a Wendy's.
You're absolutely right. In 2005, police in New Hampshire charged a Ronald McDonald with robbing a Wendy's. The restaurant's manager called the police after he saw Mr. McDonald and an accomplice taking cash from the safe at 1:30 a.m. Though sadly, it's spelt M-A-C Donald, not M-C Donald, so it in fact isn't amusing at all.
You may not be surprised to discover that one of the 11 herbs and spices in the famous KFC recipe is believed to have powerful sun protection qualities. The chain decided to create its own KFC extra crispy sunscreen. With a smell of fried chicken, it was ideal for keen KFC-loving sunbathers who wanted a well-browned drumstick without the danger of singeing their bucket. It is thought that the cardboard wasted in the unfilled corners of a pizza box, due to the round nature of its contents, equates to an area the size of Uruguay every year. It is known as the Boris Box effect because it is a pointless waste of space. Apple have patented a round pizza box, but as is often the way with Apple products, these will be non-compatible with motorbike square delivery boxes and everything will have to be upgraded.
Tony.
I think Apple will have covered that option just in case.
You're absolutely right. Yes. Apple holds a patent for round pizza boxes, which are used in the cafeteria of its campus at Cupertino, California. So, yes, well done, Tony. Zoe.
Oh, don't say it like that.
How should I say it?
With surprise.
With surprise?
Yeah.
Well done, Tony. Not as slow as you look.
I've bet they keep that bit in the show.
Construction workers in Winnipeg, Canada, eat more of Subway's omelette breakfast subs than anywhere else on Earth, as they have found that Subway's specially blended egg has similar properties to roof sealant. They also use the inside of McDonald's super hot apple pies to melt plastic.
Justin.
I regret pressing my buzzer, but I'm going to commit that you could use certain things in Subway egg things as roof sealant.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Yes, the premium egg blend used to make Subway's egg omelette subs contains glycerin, a solvent found in soap and shaving cream, dimethyl polysiloxane, a silicon that can also be found in silly putty, and calcium silicate, a sealant used on roofs and concrete. And that's the end of Zoe's lecture. And at the end of that round, Zoe, you've managed to smuggle one truth past the rest of the panel, which is that KFC created its own KFC Extra Crispy Sunscreen. According to a KFC press release, harmful ultraviolet rays bounce off your skin while the lovely fragrance penetrates it to give you a healthy chicken aroma. And that means, Zoe, you've scored 1 point. People can now go on a virtual date with Colonel Sanders in the official KFC online game, I Love You, Colonel Sanders. Though be warned, you're likely to be excluded by the game's moderators if you attempt anything more than finger-licking. Next up is Lucy Porter. Lucy, your subject is the Tudors, monarchs of the Tudor line who ruled England from 1485 to 1603. Off you go, Lucy.
The Tudors were surprisingly modern, given that they invented the words Instagram, email, texting, zorbing, and had an early version of Tinder that involved copping off with whoever was in the stocks that day. The Tudors were so keen on recycling that King Henry VIII's last wife, Catherine Parr, was named after his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, significantly reducing their carbon footprint and the time spent amending headed notepaper, or beheaded notepaper as it was known at the time. Jane Seymour wrestled a bear to catch Henry's eye. Anne of Cleves thought becoming an archery champion was the way to his heart, while Catherine Howard took a more pragmatic approach and practiced being beheaded.
Tony.
Anne of Cleves was a tremendous archer.
She didn't do any archery, as far as we know. She might have done a bit at some point. Mm. I can't completely know.
No.
But she didn't do archery to try and get her way into Henry VIII's heart. She had a terrible life, to be honest.
Did she?
Yeah, she got sent over to marry Henry VIII on the basis of a portrait. Turns up, he goes, actually, no, this is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But he's embarrassed, to be fair on him.
Yeah.
And he says, how about being my sister instead?
Nice.
And she goes, okay, will there be, like, a house and money? Yeah, there'll be a house and money, but I, you know...
Well, maybe they got to share a bath.
Yes, I don't know whether she asked for that.
Well, brothers and sisters often share baths, don't they? But,
yes.
When they're young.
Usually earlier in their life. Yeah. Lucy.
Henry VIII was the first person to use the phrase public house for an inn or tavern, and the many popular pub staples invented in the Tudor era include the world's first mechanical fruit machine, which was built to entertain the young Edward VI, King Henry VIII would unwind by playing darts.
Justin.
I firmly believe that they invented a fruit machine for the young...
Edward VI.
Edward VI.
No.
Oh.
Would have been a good fruit machine. Oh, quince, quince, quince. That's all we've got. Zips were invented by the Tudors, but banned by Henry VIII after an unfortunate incident with a zip on a codpiece at one of the royal palaces, which gave rise to the phrase, to get your Hampton caught.
And that's the end of Lucy's lecture. And at the end of that round, Lucy, you've managed to smuggle 5 truths. Wow. And they are... that Catherine Howard practiced being beheaded. According to Catherine Howard's ladies-in-waiting, who were with her in the Tower of London, when the fifth wife of Henry VIII found out that she was going to be executed, she requested that the chopping block be brought to her room and then spent the evening before her execution practising how to lay her head on it. Happily for Catherine, it says here, happily for Catherine. The next morning at 9 a.m, the executioner took her head off with a single blow. So really, she had nothing to complain about. The second truth is that the Tudors invented the word email. Oh. The word email was used in the Tudor period as an alternative to the word enamel. The third truth is that the Tudors also invented the word texting. During the Tudor era, texting meant to write in large, neat letters. The fourth truth is that King Henry VIII's last wife, Catherine Parr, was named after his first wife, Catherine of Aragon. Parr's mother was lady-in-waiting to Catherine of Aragon and made the queen godmother to her daughter, and hence she was named after her. Catherine Parr was also the first English woman to publish a book under her own name, as well as the first author ever to publish a book in English in England. And the fifth truth is that King Henry VIII would unwind by playing darts. The game had been popular in England since the 1300s, when it was a military pastime with soldiers throwing spearheads at upturned wine barrels and tree trunks. Henry VIII played a more elevated version of the game using, quote, an exotic set of richly decorated Pyrenean boar spears, gifted to him by Anne Boleyn during their courtship. And that means, Lucy, that you've scored 5 points. It's now the turn of Tony Hawks. Your subject, Tony, is swearing, the use of language that's considered vulgar, obscene, or irreverent in polite or formal speech. Off you go, Tony.
I can tell you, I've been looking forward to giving this lecture all week. Nothing is as good for you as swearing. It makes you better at table tennis, passing exams, tolerating pain, and driving in an emergency.
Zoe.
It does make you better at tolerating pain.
It does!
Yes.
Yes, the fact that we instinctively curse when we're in pain is probably because we know it helps. In studies, scientists have found that swearing increases pain tolerance by up to 33%, with the F word being the most effective.
I know this personally because last year I dislocated my shoulder in Austria and the doctor popped it back in without any painkillers, and I called him a word he had to Google Translate afterwards. But it helped in the moment.
Yes. Yeah.
Furthermore, it's a sign of intelligence, I can assure you.
Lucy.
I think intelligent people do swear more. Contrary to everything my parents ever told me.
You're absolutely right. A 2015 study undertaken by Marist College in the US found links between how fluent a person is in the English language and how fluent they are at swearing. This correlation suggests that rather than a sign of low intelligence, creative swearing is a sign of articulate and effective communicators. So, you know.
It is big and it is clever.
Yeah, exactly.
My mum was very clever, but she never used to swear except when we watched the movie Titanic. And at the end of that, she just turned to the room and went, well, that was shit. She'd been saving it up for about 70 years,
yeah.
And it was really worth it.
Well, I hope it reduced her pain, having sat through 3 hours of that. The most predictable film imagined. The weakness in the premise is everyone knows what's going to happen. And they have two characters that you're encouraged to care about. So there's a bit of mystery there, what's going to happen. Oh, no, there isn't, because one of them's narrating it.
In 1875, Samuel Morse suggested to the British Admiralty that the first letters of Save Our Souls should be developed for ships in distress. But the Admiralty felt that they should save everyone and not just our souls. In the 1970s, well-known swearer Mary Whitehouse used to complain if programmes didn't have swear words in them. This set a trend, with viewers complaining to Ofcom that an episode of The Thick of It didn't contain enough swearing.
Justin.
I have a suspicion that might be true.
Not enough swearing, yeah. In The Thick of It. That's not true. No.
I ought to know.
Did you also have a suspicion that it might not be true?
Yes, I did have a suspicion it might not be true. Yeah. I was very, yeah.
It was going to be one or the other.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened with a reunion performance of Monty Python Live, mostly, and Ricky Gervais Live at the O2. TV presenter Fiona Bruce had to apologise to viewers when she was accidentally heard at the start of her show complaining that week after week, all I get is a load of effing useless antiques.
Zoe.
I've had a glass of wine with Fiona Bruce, and I reckon after a sort of little Pinot Grigio, she's capable of that sort of language.
Well, it's not true.
Oh, it's disappointing. She's let me down.
No.
The BBC ended up broadcasting an apology at the end of that particular edition of Question Time. Brahms and Liszt is not Cockney rhyming slang for drunk because Liszt rhymes with pissed, but because Liszt was a foul-mouthed junkie and Brahms was a heavy drinker renowned for his shocking behaviour at respectable gatherings. At one such gathering, he got drunk and used a word so shocking it broke up the party he was attending and no one would repeat it. It is now believed that the word was either Trump or Farage. In 2009, two schoolchildren were arrested in the HMV store in London's Oxford Street for vandalising record covers by adding swear words to song titles. Amongst the defaced titles were Pratt Out of Hell, Tubular Bell End, and Total Eclipse of My Arse. There's a village called Knob in Norway, a village called Upper Arse in Yorkshire, a Mount Buggery in Australia, a Piss Flaps in Hungary, and a Butthole in South Africa.
Justin.
Buggery.
Mount Buggery.
Just going straight for that.
Absolutely right. Yes, there is a Mount Buggery in Australia. There's also a Buggeroo in Sardinia, a Bastards Town in Ireland, a Butthole Lane in Leicestershire, a Shit in Iran, and Orkney and Shetland both have a twat.
Can I just point out that that's the first time the words buggery and absolutely right have been on Radio 4? In 1974, Miriam Buxton was out walking with her husband when she believed she saw the Archbishop of Canterbury in plain clothes at a bus stop. She persuaded her husband to cross the road to ask the man if he really was the Archbishop of Canterbury. When her husband approached the man, he swore at him, telling him to piss off. The husband returned to his wife and she asked him what happened and he said he told me to piss off. That's a shame, she said. Now we'll never know.
Thank you, Tony. And at the end of that round, Tony, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that viewers complained to Ofcom about lack of swearing, but it was not an episode of The Thick of It. It was the reunion performance of Monty Python Live Mostly. And the second truth is that Brahms was a heavy drinker renowned for his shocking behaviour at respectable gatherings, and at one such gathering, he got drunk and used a word so shocking it broke up the party he was attending and no one would repeat it. Brahms would have been familiar with all the choicest swear words, having played the piano in pubs and brothels for money as a young man. And that means, Tony, you've scored 2 points. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with -1 point, we have Zoe Lyons. In third place, with 0 points, it's Tony Hawkes. In second place, with 2 points, it's Justin Edwards. And in first place, with an unassailable 5 points, it's this week's winner, Lucy Porter. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Tony Hawkes, Justin Edwards, Zoe Lyons and Lucy Porter. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.
Drama on BBC Radio 4.
Nothing today is as straightforward as it seems.
A 21st century take on an Indian classic.
If you were a god, how would you manifest in the modern world?
When asked the right questions, the right answers will be served.
The epic Mahabharata now continues as family rifts mean difficult choices.
We're going to make them pay for what they've done.
But is it really a choice if it's offered by a god?
You have thought enough. Time now for action.